This episode of the podcast is brought to you by All Black Hockey Sticks. All Black Hockey Sticks is the 100% carbon fiber, 440 gram, All Black Hockey Stick. You may reach out to them at allblackhockeysticks.com, type in the referral box, Hoosier Hockey Live, and you'll be entered to win a prize at the end of the month via Hoosier Hockey Live. You may also reach out to them by phone. Their number is 831-68-STICK. Again, that's 831-68-STICK. Allblackhockeysticks.com. Again, promo code Hoosier Hockey Live. This episode of Hoosier Hockey Live is also brought to you by Sick Hockey. Sick Hockey is an Indiana company that has the sickest threads for the hockey lifestyle. Go to sickhockey.com and you may use promo code Hoosier for 20% off your entire order. Again, that's sickhockey.com. They've got t-shirts, hats, beanies, beer koozies, and other products there that you guys will like. Again, that's sickhockey.com, promo code Hoosier. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by JustHockeyJerseys.com. Quality jerseys, custom artwork, unbeatable prices. If all those things sound awesome to you, go to JustHockeyJerseys.com. It's tournament season for beer leaguers, and if you guys want to have the sickest jerseys and socks at the tournament, you're going to want to go to JustHockeyJerseys.com. They've got the best prices, the best artwork, and I've been on a couple teams that have these jerseys, and they look fantastic. One more time, JustHockeyJerseys.com. Let's see those jerseys, boys.
Welcome to Hoosier Hockey Live, episode 26, featuring the 32-year-old Riverside, California native, a veteran of over 600 professional games, ladies and gentlemen, the captain of the Brampton Beast, Mr. Brandon Marino. Thanks for being with us, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Right on, man. So kind of just give us an update, man. How are you feeling, and how's the body right now?
It's kind of sore. I broke my ankle in February, so I actually unfortunately, I won't play until next year, obviously, because the season's over. So I haven't played, and it's been almost 3 months now. I blocked a shot and just been watching a lot of hockey, unfortunately, but it's coming along. Other than that, feel really good and just kind of getting ready for the summer to start, I guess.
Very good. Awesome. Episode 26 of Hoosier Hockey Live is brought to you by All Black Hockey Sticks. All Black Hockey Sticks is the 100% carbon fiber, 440 gram, and now for $89, all yours at allblackhockeysticks.com.
I got you.
All right, right on. So, yeah, allblackhockeysticks.com, guys. Go to the site. Larry Owen, his team will take care of you. Thanks to All Black Hockey Sticks for your support of Hoosier Hockey Live. So we are off and running. Brandon, the Beast just finished up a six-game series with Newfoundland Growlers, the Toronto affiliate. I know you weren't playing in it, but just kind of give us your general thoughts on this hard-fought series in the first round.
Yeah, I think, honestly, that's exactly what it was. We had, unfortunately, three overtime losses. All four of our losses were one-goal games. I thought both teams, you know, came out pretty well. And I think it's just kind of one of those things, you know, a puck this way or a puck that way, it could go the other way. But, unfortunately, that wasn't the case for us this year. So they have a really good freaking team, though. I mean, they do a really good job with their farm system in Toronto and kind of filtering guys through the entire program, and they're always paying attention. So they had a really good team, especially for being a new team in the league this year. I think they kind of stunned a lot of people a little bit, kind of like the Vegas of last year in this league, where they just are, you know, a really, really good team right after from day one, they were first in our division. So
very good. So what do you like that Brampton did that kept that series close? What went right for you guys at times that kind of kept you, you know, in the very mix?
Yeah, I think the thing that I took away from it, obviously, with watching the games was our resilience. I think that after the third game, when we went down 3-0, losing 3 one-goal games, the last two games were overtime games. I think, you know, we easily could have kind of shut it down and just accepted that, you know, it was pretty much impossible that we were going to win the series. And, you know, not really came out with a lot of piss and vinegar like we did the fourth and fifth game there. And, you know, I thought that the guys did a really good job of not doing that. I thought that even when we were down 3-0, we still had a strong belief that we could win the series. And I think even the last game that we lost in overtime again and in Newfoundland, the game six, we really believed we were going to win that game. And watching the game, I honestly wasn't nervous, and you know, I didn't fall that way, but I think that we always had that belief in the room and throughout the guys that we were going to actually come back and win four straight and go on to the second round. And you know, unfortunately that's not what happened, but I was really proud to see the guys kind of have that attitude, because it's especially, I think, for us, you know, we're not making millions of dollars. So at our league, I think you hit a point. Sometimes guys are like, you know what, whatever, screw it. Summer's around the corner. Let's get ready. Let's get the golf clubs out and get ready for that. And I thought our guys did a good job of not having that mentality.
Right on. Yeah. So with that in mind, you've been around this game a long time and you've played at a high level, know what it takes to win. What didn't you like about that series?
I thought we depended on our goaltending a little too much. Our goalie was unbelievable. Etienne Marcou played awesome. He was an Indy. You guys probably know his name quite well, actually.
Yep.
So he was awesome all series. He kept us in games. You know, a couple of the games that we lost maybe shouldn't have been as close as they were. So he gave us a real, real good chance to win. So I thought that, you know, we at times we depended on him a little too much, you know, just because he was playing so well. So it was almost easy to do. You almost believe he was just going to make every save. So I think that, you know, we set back a little bit too much, and we didn't kind of have at times the pushback we needed for the time of year to really get the job done. So I thought that we could have improved along that. But like I said, at the end of the day, we still had good resilience. It went to six games, whether it's you lose the first three and then win two, or if we went back and forth for, you know, games one through five, and it was just someone has to be up 3-2 at the end of five games. So either way, that's where they were, and they got the job done in game six. So.
Right on. So moving forward with the summer months, and, you know, I know that you guys have just had your exit interviews, and I'm sure, you know, Colin's been pulling advice and opinions of a lot of different people. What are a couple of things specifically that maybe you guys talked about where you have to be better next year?
I think just maybe getting a little bit more grit. I thought we had a really, really skilled group of guys this year, which, you know, it's hard because you don't want to turn away a good player just because he's maybe not, you know, doesn't play the most physical game. But at the same time, I think, you know, sometimes that's lacking. And I felt there was times this year that when teams started to be really physical with us, it wasn't something that we handled well as a group. You know, so I think that that's an area of concern, is just kind of, you know, basically having that within the group of, you know, not necessarily always throwing a huge hit, but having guys that will go in the corners, play strong down low, be strong on their sticks on a consistent basis. And sometimes it's something you can't teach, unfortunately. So I think finding guys like that, that you can mix into your lineup that can also play the game. I think that's the hardest part with it only being a 10 forward league, is finding guys that can play, because you can't really have a fourth line of guys that are just going to go out and intimidate people but aren't going to do much else. They've got to be able to play to some level. So that's the challenge, I think, is finding that kind of that good mix. So
that's
something that we'll kind of stress for sure.
Is there anyone that currently fits that blueprint that you're looking to get another guy like him in your lineup?
On our back end, we have a couple guys that play pretty tough. You know, Jonathan Racine plays a pretty on the edge game, kind of, you know, right on the border there sometimes, but I think you need that. In terms of up front, I thought that, you know, we don't really have that big 6'5" guy that really likes to go in and throw a big body check, or, you know, just kind of getting guys' faces. That just wasn't the makeup of our team. So I think that's something that, you know, we could definitely look for to try to improve on for next year.
Right on. Now, we talked about Newfoundland being the Toronto affiliate and Brampton fairly recently this last year, changing to Ottawa. Talk about the cultural importance of that series and the rivalry that is kind of starting within that division in the league, and just kind of give us your thoughts on why that was really important.
Yeah,
in the
first round matchup. I think it's awesome, obviously, just in terms of, one, for our league having the other Canadian team now, whereas we were the only Canadian team. And one, and geographically, it makes sense. Obviously, they're a little bit closer to us, so I mean, we have to fly. They're still obviously being, you know, as far east as you can go almost. But, you know, it kind of just gives that unique rivalry between the two Canadian teams. Then obviously, I think the Toronto-Ottawa rivalry is there as well. Maybe not quite as much as the Montreal that, we, you know, how we were in the past, we were affiliated with Montreal, but I think that it's still, you know, just when you have the Canadian team and they're in such close proximity to each other, you're always going to have, you know, a bit more of I guess, hatred for that team just because you see them a lot too, right? We played, I think someone counted up
sure.
our preseason, playoffs, and regular season. I think we played that team 24 times. So I'm sure if you asked any of their guys, they probably agree that at the end of it, there was probably a mutual hatred for each other. And, you know, you kind of see the same faces quite a bit and get to know each other. So I think it's easy to have that rivalry, which in terms of fans and the league is great. So
sure. Right on. And you mentioned the Montreal Canadiens and the affiliation that you guys have had there for several years and transitioning to the Senators organization. Speak about that transition and maybe some of the effects that it had on you guys as an organization and how that trickles down.
Yeah, I think it kind of just happened organically. We were still affiliated with Montreal last year and mm-hmm. But with Belleville coming into the AHL last year, they were just so close, right? They're only 2 hours mm-hmm. up the road, whereas Montreal's 5 or 6 mm-hmm. hours. So, you know, it's still not that far. It's a quick flight, but it's just easier for players to go up or come down when they're, you know, 2 hours up the road. So I think that
sure.
it kind of naturally just was a good fit last year. We had, you know, just kind of an arrangement with them where they would help us out. We'd help them out type thing just with the proximity. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of blossomed into – you know what, maybe this was a better route for both of us. And, you know, it allowed Montreal to go a different way. And I think that it benefited our organization more than our Montreal affiliation. And just with Montreal likes to do things a certain way. And mm-hmm. they, you know, they like their guys to be practicing with their team. You know, their view might be more, you're better off being here practicing than playing down there. Whereas I think Ottawa's view and Belleville was a little bit more, we'd rather guys that may just be practicing and watching games go and get some game time, especially their young guys, their young prospects that, you know, at the end of the day, the only way to really improve is to play. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a guy the year before, Willie Cord, go up to Laval for mm-hmm. about 6 weeks and then play. So when he got sent to us, you know, the first 4 or 5 games, he frankly wasn't very good because he hasn't
right.
had a game situation. He's just been practicing for 6 weeks.
Right.
So I think that finding that fine line in terms of development is knowing, you know, how to, you know, sometimes you got to send a guy down and let him get some game time and get some confidence. And mm-hmm. I think that with the proximity of Belleville, it just was way easier for that to be accomplished this year. And then it also on the flip side, when they needed a guy, you know, we had guys very close, Aaron Luchuk, Daniel Ciampini, Jonathan Racine, Boston Lear. Like, there's 6, 7 guys that were in and out of our organization and up with Belleville throughout the year, and I think that the proximity is huge. And I think you see that basically that shift in the AHL in general with teams being closer, NHL having their AHL teams closer, and I think it's mm-hmm. a big reason why hockey's kind of, you know, progressing and developing the way it is.
Right on. Okay, so last question regarding the coast. Talk generally about where you think the league is at from a development standpoint. You mentioned those guys maybe not, you know, practicing and then getting bagged, maybe having that development like you mentioned. Just speak to that as far as how that affects the coast when the guys do come down and get those caps.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. I think that the ECHL has honestly transitioned and has become so much better just in the last 5 to 7 years since I've been playing in it. Mm-hmm. And I can remember after my last year in Fort Wayne when I went to Europe and I came back and I played in Brampton, just in that 2 years when I came back, I remember thinking, man, the league is way better this year than it was 2 years ago. And sure. I think it really is because of the affiliations now. I think you see it's a lot more like baseball where you have your NHL, AHL, ECHL. So it's that top tier, AA, AAA, one organization all the way through. And by that shift from the teams down in California that left the coast and went into the AHL and then mm-hmm. moved more to the East Coast, most of the AHL teams are now very close, if not in the same city, to their NHL mm-hmm. teams. And the ECHL teams are getting a little bit, trying to get a closer proximity as well. It's not quite like it is in the mm-hmm. NHL and AHL, but they're trying to do a better job of getting those teams closer also. So, for instance, Toronto, they're in the same city. Then Newfoundland is a 3-hour flight, but when they come to us, which was, I think, 6 times this year, mm-hmm. like Kyle Dubas, all the big wig Toronto guys were in mm-hmm. Brampton watching them play. Also, I think that just having your farm teams be such a close proximity to each other and have a good relationship where you're really watching the guys that are in the ECHL makes it, one, guys are, you know, no one's okay with being in the ECHL, especially as a young guy. You know, you come out, you come out of college, you think you're going to go to the AHL, NHL, you get sent to the ECHL to blow to your ego. It's hard to swallow at first, but I think that guys are becoming more understanding with it because of the transition and how well it's being scouted and watched by the upper teams and the scouts above us. So, and I think that that's part of why the league has gotten so much better, because now when the players come down, they don't see it as a joke, maybe like 10 years ago. I know, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was kind of, go down there. It's a glorified beer league. We don't have to try that hard, whatever. Now, I mean, guys come down and I think that their first couple games is actually a bit of a shell shock, because they realize that if they don't want to stay in the ECHL, they're going to have to work and they're going to have to perform to get out of it, because it is a good league and a lot of the players that are here care, you know, and want to move on. And you see, I think it's over almost close to 650, 700 guys now that have played games in the ECHL that go on to play in the NHL. So, you know, I think the development is definitely there within our league.
It's definitely one of those things. I think it was last season towards the end, the East Coast League, they boasted that 600th guy. And, you know, kind of going back to that question of where the league is at, you know, you guys have a new commissioner and he spoke so highly of that number and not just being guys that maybe see one or two games, but have substantial time up there and that are guys that, you know, are maybe instead of ECHL, AHL career guys, maybe they're AHL, NHL, you know, bringing that tier up just a little bit. So, you know, good insight on that. So I was doing a little research on DB. You have 33 AHL games, all of which were on the loan status from what I could see. Speak to what gave you those opportunities and how you were able to capitalize and make a couple stints, you know, longer than maybe one or two games.
I think that my first opportunity, to be quite honest, was because the lockout ended in, what was it, 2008 or whenever, not 2008, sorry, 2013 maybe, or whenever, well, whenever the last lockout was, when I was in my first year in Fort Wayne, actually. The lockout ended, so about 12 guys from every AHL team went up to the NHL, and when that happened, a bunch of guys from the East Coast got called up, so I was called up to Norfolk for about 3 days, played a game, and got sent back when the camp ended. So that one, I would say, was just kind of a little bit fortunate of timing. Then I'd say the one that really sticks, though, is I played 30 games in Utica 4 years ago. And that one was more, I think I got the opportunity because Chalker believed in me. He got a call from Pat Conacher, the player of director of hockey operations in Utica, asking him about who they could call up. And, you know, Chalker said, I think you should give this guy a chance. He's, you know, he's performed well at this level. He's proved himself. He works hard. You know, just kind of, you know, sold me a little bit to Pat. And, you know, Pat's like, okay, yeah, we'll take a chance on him. And I went up to Utica, and I think that, you know, so that was kind of got me there, is a guy having a belief in me and taking a chance. And then for me, it was more once I got there, just playing the way that they expected me to play, you know, not trying to be the same player there that I was in the ECHL. Whereas, you know, in Brampton or Fort Wayne, I'd be a guy that was on the power play, killing penalties, playing in every situation. Whereas there, you know, I wasn't on the power play. I wasn't killing penalties. It's basically just a fourth line role where if the game had a lot of power play time, I wasn't going to play much. If it was more of even strength, I'd actually, you know, get a pretty decent regular shift most nights. But, you know, just got pucks out of my zone and got pucks into their zone. Didn't try to make any plays that weren't there. I just, you know, tried to play a smart hockey game. And I'll never forget my exit meeting with Travis Green, who was the coach at the time, was now with Vancouver. And he said, he goes, you were a lot better than I expected you to be. So it's kind of one of those things of coming in. I don't think he expected too much from the guys coming out of the coast. It was more they just needed players. They were short guys, so they had to fill spots for, you know, at the time, probably we'll keep them for a couple games until we have our guys back. But I went in and I felt like I played well and earned his respect and earned the coach's respect. And, you know, I ended up playing 30 games there. I think I was there for 36 games. I played 30 of them, and then I played all four games of the first round before we got knocked out in the playoffs. And I think it was just, you know, a testament to playing the right way, working hard, and just, you know, just kind of doing things the right way. So,
very good. Yeah, you mentioned the sale by Chalker. I imagine it wasn't a hard sale. You know, you led the league in scoring in Fort Wayne. I think it was 2013. That year was unreal, and it was a lot of fun to watch. So, yeah, I mean, that's got to be a rush, you know, getting that call from him. And I imagine you were just overwhelmed, right?
Yeah, it was kind of funny, just the timing of it. You know, like you said, I'd had pretty good years, some years where I led the league in points, things like that, you know, and especially as a young guy, you kind of assume that's what you have to do if you want to get called up. And I never really, again, other than that chance in that one game in Norfolk, but like I said, it wasn't really, I don't consider it a true call up. It was more circumstance. And I think that, so like for me, it was just the timing of it was interesting. Whereas, you know, I was still having a good year. I think I was still a point in game, but I was 29 years old. So the last thought really that year and at that time was trying to go up. You know, I was more so kind of, you know, knew in my, well, thought I knew that, you know, this is where I'd spend my career. And for whatever reason, the opportunities at higher levels just weren't in the cards for me. And, you know, I was fine with that. You know, I always had that feeling that I think I could play at that level if given the chance, but, you know, it hadn't happened. So, you know, it's the way life goes sometimes. And I kind of, you know, was content with, you know, I know I've always worked my ass off and done the right things. And if it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't meant to be. So when Chalker called me, it was funny. I was kind of honestly a little like, well, what do you think? Do you think I should go? Because I figured, you know what, do I really want to go for a weekend, get sent, you know, just to get sent back type thing? You know, I'm not really thinking it's going to turn into what it did. And and Chalker's words to me were, I think you've worked your ass off for a long time at this game and haven't got an opportunity, and this is an opportunity. I think you should take it and, you know, see where it goes. So, you know, I kind of, and my wife's father was actually in town that night, and we were packing up to go down to Florida for a road trip. We were supposed to leave at 6 a.m. to Florida, and I got the call that I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to Utica, New York instead. So I put away the shorts and grabbed my suit clothes and all my warm winter clothes again, and kind of went that route. And it ended up honestly probably being one of the best decisions I ever made, getting the opportunity. And more so for me, I was able to prove to myself that I could play at that level. And, you know, not just, again, not just for a weekend, I was able to go in and spend half the season there, and play in the playoffs, you know, and kind of earn the respect of the organization. Yeah, I think for me, that was just a big accomplishment to kind of set my mind at ease that, you know what, I was good enough. And, you know, for whatever reason, again, it didn't happen earlier in my career, and that's life. And, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. But so it was, I think it was really nice for me to kind of just kind of close that chapter a little bit, I guess.
Right on. Very good, man. Yeah. Good insight on all that, brother. I'm going to make a quick transition here. I'm going to do a quick ad read real quick. This episode of Hoosier Hockey Live is also brought to you by Sick Hockey. For the sickest threads for the hockey lifestyle, you've got hats like the ones I'm wearing here. They've got the Rise to Grind line as well. This beautiful hat that's been featured on the show as well. T-shirts, other, you know, items, beer koozies for those that are playing in the beer league tournament this weekend. You'll be getting some Sick Hockey koozies. If all these things sound like good stuff and stuff you could sport to the rink, go to sickhockey.com. Our promo code is Hoosier at checkout. So if you go on, order up your stuff, get it in the cart, go to checkout, type in promo code Hoosier, you're going to receive 20% off your entire order. One more time, sickhockey.com. Thanks to Sean and his team for supporting Hoosier Hockey Live. All right, Brandon, we're going to play a game, something we've done with a lot of guests. It's working out well. It's called Rapid Fire. I'm just going to send some questions your way.
Okay.
The first thing that comes to your mind, just shoot an answer.
All right.
All right, here we go. Favorite shoe brand?
Steve Madden.
Favorite adult beverage?
Old Fashioned.
Favorite non-hockey city?
Budapest, Hungary.
Biggest pet peeve?
Ooh, probably heavy breathers or inconsiderate people.
Favorite subject when you were in school?
Chemistry.
Cheat meal?
P Pizza and ice cream every Sunday.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Ooh.
Yeah. One's right here listening.
Very good. All right, man. Cool. Thanks for doing that for us. That's absolutely something that the fans enjoy, and it just kind of lets us into your brain a little bit. And
what's your drink of choice?
Oh man, I like Molson Canadian, man. I'm simple.
Indiana, Midwest boy, makes sense.
Yeah. So I won't turn down a light beer. But we've got Osiris here. It's a Sun King Brewery. It's an Indiana brew, and that's a good one as well. So,
I've never been much for beer. I'm more bourbon and whiskey and that kind of stuff personally.
Right on. Very good. Yeah. All right, man. So we're going to dive into the personal side of it. Some of the things that maybe people don't know about you that haven't had the privilege of watching you when you were in Fort Wayne or in Brampton. So we'll just dive into this stuff. So you're married. Tell us about that. How long have you been married?
July 21st will be 2 years. So
awesome.
Still fresh.
And very good. Yeah. Nancy, right?
Yep, Nancy, yep.
Very good. Where did you guys get married?
It's called the Two Harbors, Minnesota. It's right off Lake Superior. So she's from Minnesota, and we met at school when I went to Bemidji. We have a lot of friends there and stuff. And it's just, it looks like you're on the ocean. We were going back and forth between an ocean wedding. We kind of wanted to be on the water, and it was the best of both worlds. Really green, and a lot of bushes up there, but also you look out on Lake Superior and you can't see the other side. So it kind of got the best of both worlds.
Awesome. Cool, man. Was she a hockey fan when you guys met?
Not really, no. She doesn't mind it, but she wouldn't be watching it on TV or anything.
Right on.
That hasn't changed.
Excellent. What do you, in your opinion, again, I know it's fresh for you, but what do you think is the best thing about being married?
Honestly, probably just having someone to do stuff with and share your time with. I think it's funny, we kind of talk about that. It's hard because we lived together for about 4 or 5 years before getting married. So to be honest, not a whole lot changed from dating to being married. So I think just knowing that, for me, she's always there. She's always supported me. I don't make millions of dollars playing hockey, but I love playing. And, she's never made me feel like I need to stop doing it or anything like that. And I think just having someone that supports me and I know that's always there for me is great. And, I always enjoy spending time with her. So I think just having her around all the time, some people say they don't like to be around their wife or spouse all the time, but I can honestly say I don't really get sick of her. So
very good.
I don't know if she could say the same for me or not, but
it's early. It's early.
Yeah. Another 4 or 5 years. So
right on. So, there's something that's not necessarily new news, but you guys got something going on in June. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we do. We have our first daughter coming in June, our first child, I should say, in general, but a baby girl, and yeah, we're excited. It's kind of one of those things. It's still not real, but it is real, and we're definitely slowly getting ready and starting to prep and get our bags ready and just have everything just in case things happen. And yeah, it's kind of something we're definitely looking forward to and excited about. It's not really, it wasn't a surprise. We knew we wanted to have kids soon, and something we were trying for. So we're just kind of blessed and happy to know that it's coming. So
very good.
A little nerve wracking, but I think,
sure.
If it wasn't, then, you probably aren't thinking the right way. So
right on. No one's hitting the panic button yet.
Nope, not yet. So
very good. Is the nursery ready?
No, that's honestly probably the only panic button is every year so much in transition and never know what's going on. We just settled on an apartment here in Toronto area for the summer. We don't know if that's where we'll be staying long term. So it's not really necessarily going to have a nursery, but luckily she'll be so small she won't remember, and she'll lay in the same room as us for a while anyway. So
very good. Awesome. So how is Nancy feeling? I'm sure she's got to be kind of getting nervous every day that goes by.
Yep, I think it was 2 days ago was the first time she said, I'm sick of being pregnant. So it's starting to, she's starting to feel like a house a little bit, and she feels like the baby has no room. But other than that, we've been pretty lucky in terms of growth and no real concerns. So yeah, feeling good. And she has her days where she's over it, and But then obviously at the end of the day, she remembers what she's got brewing in there. And I think she's as excited as I am, obviously.
Awesome. Very good. All right, man. So, I want to kind of transition from the personal stuff at the house to kind of the hockey related wife specific questions.
Okay.
I'm going to rip a quick ad read. This episode is also brought to you by Steiner Sports Training. In Indianapolis, there's only one big facility, and that is Steiner. So whether you're going for an individual workout or a team workout, Steiner is able to make customized workouts. So whether you want to hit up the turf run, the Olympic-style weight room, or the synthetic ice treadmill on the hockey deck, Steiner's got everything you want. So they also have a shooting lane with a full net so you can get your hands right like Brandon Marino and score a shit ton of goals. And you're going to need to hit up SteinerSportsTraining.com. Thanks to Chris Klein and his crew for supporting Hoosier Hockey Live and making this one of the best podcasts here in Indianapolis. So thanks one more time, SteinerSportsTraining.com. You're welcome. Brandon.
Yep.
Does Nancy travel for hockey?
No. She did. She did once. This year she came with some of the girls to Fort Wayne, actually, for the New Year's game when we were there. But that was, I don't know if that was there for hockey or to see old friends. So we got to go out with some
right
friends. Kaylee Schrock, we met up with him and his wife, Morgan, one night. And then actually two of the nights, I think, while we were in town because we were there for a couple days. So that's probably the only time I think she's traveled for hockey.
Right on. Yeah, you know, Kaylee Schrock, friend of the show, been on before, not a big deal.
I didn't care to tune into that one. I don't need to watch Schrocky talk. Talked enough off the video screen here.
Right on. So does Nancy ever talk to you about hockey, or is it more of a she just figures you get enough of that at the rink?
We don't ever talk hockey.
All right.
I'm fine with that. I personally, I'm glad I don't come home. You know, some guys have wives and girlfriends that have played the game and they understand the game and they can have good conversations about it. And I'm sure that there's times that's nice, but I prefer to come home and, you know, kind of park it and not have to worry about it and not have her tell me what I did wrong. So
right on.
I have my dad for that still.
Very good. So is her pulse different during the season as opposed to the summer?
No, she's pretty calm both ways.
Very good. So if you had to guess, what's your wife's favorite thing about hockey?
I would say watching like the team I'm on play live. Like she enjoys going to the games, talking to other wives, watching the games, you know, in the building, that kind of thing. But she doesn't watch
them. Okay. And then the flip side, what do you think is Nancy's least favorite thing about hockey?
If it's pertaining to my team, road trips, if it's just hockey in general, just having to watch it on TV when I'm watching it.
Very good. Awesome. I had a question that came up. My wife actually thought of this question because she read the script. Do the girls, do the wives with Brampton, do they get together and just hang out to kind of, you know, have
every
someone they're going through
I'll,
the same thing?
Yeah, I'll be honest, not as much as other teams I've been on. It's a little bit of a different dynamic here. We have a lot of guys from the area, so we're really, really spread out. Like, we have guys that like a group of guys and their wives that live probably 35, 40 minutes away in Hamilton area. Then we have guys that live over in Brampton that are like, you know, probably more guys that are younger that aren't, that are here, and that's team apartments and then other guys. So we're very, very spread out. So it's for anyone to do anything, it takes somebody 40 minutes to get there basically. So, you know, there's times when we're on the road, the wives will get together or, every now and then at the games and stuff, obviously, but not quite as much as other teams I've been on where your apartments are right next to each other. So, you know, it's very easy to say, hey, you guys want to do something tonight? Sure. And you literally get in your car and it's 5 minutes, or you walk three doors down and you're to someone's apartment. So, I think that it is a little different dynamic. So it's not as much as you would see on other teams, but they definitely still get together when they can.
Right on. Very good, brother. All right, man, that wraps up the wife related hockey questions. You know, it's good to get folks that are in different stages of their life. We've had guys that are married. We've had guys that are single. We have kill stories. We've got married stories. So it's good to hear all sides of it. And we're so glad that, you know, things are going well there and that you've got a good support system and keeping you well fed and strong. So
yeah, definitely.
Very good. All right, man. So I want to kind of turn the page here. Now, we understand that you are nowhere near done with your hockey career. You're 32. You're still young. But we spoke offline the last time we got together about some post-hockey plans you have. You're able to obtain a master's degree in exercise physiology and are certified in strength and conditioning as a coach. So with getting those certificates and degrees, how do you plan to use that once you're done?
I think, the end goal for me would ideally be to open up my own space, my own gym space. I think with the start, it might be more working, whether it's strength conditioning in a high school or at a gym that's kind of geared towards that. I think that, naturally I lean more towards training the athletes, and obviously hockey players are a huge thing outlet for me because that's just what I know and what I've always known. Mm-hmm. So I think that, staying within somewhere that's more an athletically driven gym is kind of where I'd like to be, especially if that's my starting mm-hmm. point. But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. I'd like to open something up that, I'm training athletes at my gym, or even, just general population that are training for health and wellness, just kind of whatever you're looking to do. I want to have a space that I can provide that. And, that would be like the end goal for, post-hockey, obviously.
Right on. What do you think is your biggest strength when thinking about making that transition to coaching and training?
I think one, just like being good with people. I enjoy talking to people. And then I think having the passion to help other people reach the goal they want to reach. I like seeing whether it's a hockey player that's trying to get from the midget level to a junior team or going to college, or it's, just a general population person that's saying, hey, I don't need to be, ripped. I just want to be healthy. I want to, get healthier, lose a little bit of weight, but more so just want to be able to play with my kids or whatever the goal is, being able to help those individuals reach that. And I think that seeing things from other people's point of view and understanding, why they're looking to do what they want to do, and realizing that, the way that I may have trained as a hockey player is going to be good to an extent, but if I try to push someone that's not ready for that too much, I'm going to lose them. So I think just, mm-hmm. Understanding people and being good with working with people is kind of one of the strengths that I'll hopefully take into life after hockey.
Right on. So are you married to the idea of just training hockey players, or do you want to kind of diversify the clientele as far as sports goes? You mentioned the general wellness, but
And I think
in some baseball guys.
Yeah, that's kind of the nice thing about I think with the strength and conditioning is, I in my opinion, a lot of people get carried away with the sport specific. I think mm-hmm. that there are certain training aspects that are specific to certain sports, but I would say probably 80% of it is going to be pretty much the same in terms of everyone's body moves the same. We all squat, we can all bench press, we all pull ups. Certain movement mm-hmm. patterns that we all do are going to stay mm-hmm. consistent through every population. Now, some guys might be more prone to certain injuries because of their sport, or maybe because of, the type of conditioning they need. If they're obviously a marathon runner, is going to have a different training program. But if you take a hockey player and a baseball player, for instance, their main lifts are going to be very similar. Their energy systems might be trained a little bit differently, but for the mm-hmm. most part, you're going to train the body fairly similar. I think where the more sport specific comes in is more your skill training, batting, things like that, where you're working with specific coaches for that. I think it's going to be more mm-hmm. the specific side of things. And like I said, then a little bit with energy systems and how your conditioning is going to be trained. And then obviously a little bit of maybe, for like football, they're going to be training a little bit more power and strength than, maybe a hockey player's going to have a little bit more balance training, things like that, mixed in with their overall program. But I think at the end of the day, like I said, it's more rep schemes, things like that, that are going to change as opposed to really the types of lifting you're doing. And for that reason, I definitely would love to work with any athletes. I think that a lot of it transfers over to most sports, and I think that'll be an interesting part moving forward in my career, is getting to train athletes from different sports and kind of seeing what works and, picking mm-hmm. their brain and saying, hey, what's worked for you in the past? Okay, let's implement that with this and see if we can, work, grow upon that and build a stronger base for you. So definitely not going to, I don't want to just stick with just hockey players. That might be a good starting point for me, obviously, just because it's what I know, but I would definitely mm-hmm. love to branch out and, work with other people. And then also offering different things through different avenues. I think that a big, like, I'm working on stuff right now, trying to get an online based or app based programming written up to where I can help people, even if I'm not necessarily able to be in the gym with them. They can go in and they can see, look at my app, get a program that's still based on kind of what their goals are and, you know, where their current level is, whether it's beginner or advanced, have the ability to say, okay, let's start you here and progress you through. And I think that's something that would, especially for, you know, the health and wellness client that is just wants to, you know, be healthy. They don't necessarily need or want a lot of one-on-one, you're there for 2 hours a day type thing. And going back to the weaknesses, I think that's something that's going to be challenging for me as well, is I'm used to myself having in the summers, having 2-3 hours a day to do my training if I need it, you know, take my time. Whereas I feel a lot of people don't have that time, you know, that's not everyone's job isn't to play. It's, you know, again, you might have an hour with them twice a week. So, you know, being able to tailor programs that fit within that time frame, I think is going to be one of the challenges I'm looking forward to having to kind of solve for myself. So,
cool. So you mentioned hockey being what you know. Do you think that there's a specific sport for a hockey player that could pair well to make them a better hockey player specifically? And if so, what is it?
Honestly, I think just playing any sport. To be honest, I would say trying to find a sport that isn't like hockey at all. Really, you know, like maybe go play, you know, I don't know, because like every sport, anytime you're swinging like a bat, a golf club, you're adding in that twisting motion, the swinging that you're going to have with hockey. And, you know, I think the only sport that really probably translates close to hockey is probably lacrosse, and just because it's a very similar-minded game. But I think that hockey is just so unique in we talk about, like, movement. Well, hockey's probably the one sport where the movement pattern, just with the skating stride, isn't like anything else, because everything else is sagittal plane running, where you're going to cut, you're going to plant and cut, whereas, you know, we're skating, our hips are getting a little bit more extended, they're, you know, a little bit wider, so you're sitting lower in your stance than running. So there's a lot of differences in hockey. So I think that translation, there's not a lot of sports that are going to be as similar in terms of the basic mechanics. So I think that, but I would say, so instead of coupling a sport, I would say just play another sport that challenges different energy systems, especially because you get out and run. Like, hockey players' hips are locked into a flex position for so long throughout the season. Getting out, you know, getting off of off of the stationary bikes, being out, actually running, getting full hip extension, that's just going to help strengthen the muscles that don't get used throughout the season as much and start to atrophy a little bit. So,
right on. Yeah, that's good insight, man. I thought for sure lacrosse would be said. You gave me that, but you dropped some knowledge that you know, a lot of us didn't know there. So that's good stuff. So with all this being said, and kind of like a master scheme game plan, we all know what you're doing now. We just want to watch it happen. What do you feel like at this point you still have to learn in order to get to that next, you know, stage?
Honestly, I think it's just going to be implementing the programs into the real world. Like I said, with a schedule where you've got back-to-back groups coming in. You know, in the summers I've done, you know, some training with like individual athletes and stuff. But again, I have a decent amount of time. So if a training session runs long, I'm not worried about it. Whereas I think, you know, once again, the real world, if you're trying to open a gym and you got to be as efficient as possible, but also giving the client a good product. And, you know, cause like for me, I know a big thing for me, I don't want to come across as I'm trying to rush people in and out. I don't want, you know, I don't want someone to come in for their hour session and feel like, well, you still have two sets to go, but if the hour's up, so so I'll see you next week. You know, I want people to be able to get in their full workouts, but also have it within a time frame to where I'm not always running late and things like that. So I think that's going to be a big challenge for me moving into doing this full time, is really learning how to implement programs and make sure they stay on track and keep people moving and get their workouts in, but also enjoy it and not feel like I'm just running them through, you know, running the cattle through the yard there and just moving to the next. So I think that'll be a definite challenge for me.
Very good. Fan question. Leslie asked, do you have your own workout regimen? or does the team have a similar program that everyone follows on and off season?
I write my own programs. And then at our, like the NHL and AHL teams, a lot of times will have their strength guys will give programs to players that, basically it's kind of, you have the, you can do it if you'd like, or this is what we're looking for, but you can go to your own guy. A lot of guys have their own strength trainers and stuff that they go to in the summer, especially at the NHL level. But yeah, for me, like just with my background and, you know, what I want to do, I always write my own programs. And, you know, for the most part, if I find something I like, I'll try it. I'll do it for 2 or 3 years, but then eventually I always try to, you know, look into something different, try something new. And more so that's kind of the strength and conditioning side for me, is seeing what I feel works, what doesn't, and knowing when I'm going to have someone do it, I know what they're going through. I know how it feels. I know what they're experiencing so that I can coach them and, you know, not just think, oh, I think this is what's going to happen. No,
right.
Okay, this is what it feels like. But I know why. I know why your legs are burning, and I know why you're struggling right now. It's not easy. So
you've walked the walk.
My programs are, I write them up, and most guys will have someone they go to or do their own program.
Very good. Now, with a lot of guys probably knowing your goals and aspirations, do they hit you up for summer workouts for free?
Not too much, actually. I think guys, you know, they know, like, it's kind of, I think just a respect thing of, you know, if you want to, if you want training, like, I'll train you. And, like, you know, I try to help. If I played with a guy for years and stuff, I'm obviously going to try to help him out. And, you know, I don't mind being like, hey, try this, let me know what you think, type thing. But yeah, I don't, if I have to go into the gym with them every day and train, then, you know, we'll work out a payment plan. But it's, you know, a lot of times I'll help them out because I know them, and, you know, I don't want them to break the bank either, again, especially if it's guys that I
sure.
at this level, I know what the paychecks are like. So
yeah, just take you for a free round of golf, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe launch a Chipotle or something.
Very good. All right, man. Anything that maybe we didn't cover you wanted to cover?
I don't think so. I think that was a pretty good session there.
Yeah, we were rolling. We went about 45 minutes. Who do you like going forward, though, in the NHL?
Is there anyone to like this year? I mean, not. I shouldn't say it that way. There's a lot of teams to like. I'm just like, who do you look at now and say, okay, that's the team? I think this year has been awesome. I know some, I've seen some fans, some people kind of say that they're disappointed with the playoffs this year. And I think,
right,
I do agree that, because if you look yet in terms of actual big name guys, there's really not that big superstar still playing that you're like, man, I really hope that guy gets a cup or whatever. But I think it really shows a lot of just the parity of the league. I mean, to look at the teams that are in the playoffs still, and you look at who's been knocked out, it's unfathomable to think that that's happened. But right. I think if I had to pick two teams, I would say Boston out of the East, San Jose out of the West. I think that they both have experience. They've both been down that road. San Jose got past Vegas. I didn't think that they were going to, and I thought that Vegas deserved a win. I don't know if we want to get into the whole thing that happened that last game there, but I think those two teams are going to be pretty hard to beat.
I don't want to go down that road. We all know it was a joke, but yikes. Yeah, I like San Jose in the West. I'd love to see Thornton win one. You'd be silly not to think that Columbus is dangerous, man. They just swept Tampa. I mean, they're in a dogfight now, but
they got hot at the right time. I think that was the biggest thing. If you look at some of the teams this year that were like wild cards, it was teams that were better than they played. Like a team like Dallas, who went on a 10-12 game losing streak. Same with Colorado. I think that those teams you knew were good teams, and they started to peak again right at the right time and just slipped into the playoffs, but they were playing really good hockey. Same with, like, I think that was the case with Columbus. Tampa Bay had been playing for a month and a half where, you know, every game matters, but let's be honest, like, you know, you're in the playoffs, you have a good team, you're kind of in cruise mode, and then all of a sudden you got to turn it on. Whereas Columbus played the last 10 games do or die. Like, they had to keep get in. So I think you see that, and it's the same with Dallas, same with Colorado. Those teams were really playing well down the stretch, knew they had better teams than what they were showing. So these teams play them. And then, you know, I think one of the biggest surprises for me is New York, the Islanders. They just, you know, I think it shows what coaching can do sometimes, because to go from being the least the worst defensive team in the league to the best defensive team in the league in 1 year is unbelievable. Mm. So I think that, you know, they're dangerous too, just because they play such an in-your-face, up-tempo game. They never stop. They're always moving. So, yeah, I would still say that I think San Jose and Boston would be the two teams I would see to kind of meet in the finals. But, you know, really,
again, who knows?
I think it's anybody's game. So,
sure. Right on, man. I did think of one question that I kind of wanted to ask earlier, and I spaced it, wasn't written down. You've played a lot of hockey, and with this playoff, you know, like you said, there's a lot of teams that are close in talent and just the peaking at the right time, et cetera. Is there any particular scenario in a game or situation, and what I mean by that is like 5-on-5, 5-on-4, 4-on-4, 4-on-3. Is there any scenario that really sticks out as like a very dangerous opportunity or deficit in your mind? And if so, what is it?
I think that your power play just has to be rolling. I think that, you know, it's so tight 5-on-5. Teams are playing, you know, obviously everyone's playing as hard as they can. It's crazy to think, you know, you watch an NHL game in the regular season. The intensity's up. Then you watch a playoff game, and it's unbelievable the difference. You can actually see how much the intensity rises in the playoffs. Sure. And I think that intensity and controlling that is a big part of it. But I think if your power play can be hot, I mean, again, I'm going to go back to San Jose, Vegas, just because that's what won the game. The call was what it was, but at the end of the day, San Jose scored 4 goals in 5 minutes on a power play, you know, so I mean, as much as the call was bad, they still had to score 4 goals on that power play to even give themselves a chance to win. And their power play was hot at the right time. They scored 4 goals and they're in the second round because of it. You know, I think if you can get your power play rolling in the playoffs, I think you have a good chance. And if you're goaltending, I think goaltending can win the Stanley Cup for you if they're playing that well, as long as your team's playing decent.
Yeah. Exhibit A, Grubauer for Colorado. Not that Mike Smith played bad, but man, that series was just, everyone picked Calgary. Picked Calgary.
And even Martin Jones in San Jose, the last two games of the series, I think that, you know, obviously he had his woes there to start, but they stuck with him. And I know, I think it was game six that I was watching, and I could not believe San Jose won the game. Like, Vegas was all over them the entire game, but they couldn't put the puck in the back of the net. San Jose wins, and again,
was that the double overtime shorty?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, Mark... I didn't watch it until the end, but I was watching the game, and I'm like, there's no way San Jose is going to win this game. Like, Vegas, San Jose couldn't even get out of their own zone, but their goaltender kept them in, and it just takes one shot, so.
Yeah, right on. All right, man. Well, we won't keep you, brother. You know, we appreciate you coming on Hoosier Hockey Live and talking with us. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
It's so much fun talking hockey, man. We're so blessed to love a good game and a game that you know, just meets everyone where they're at. You know, that's what I love about it.
So, I agree.
So thanks, Brandon. One more time, we'd like to say thanks to our sponsors: All Black Hockey Sticks, Sick Hockey, Steiner Sports Training. Go check them out. You know, we're going to wrap this thing up. Brandon, enjoy the rest of the week, brother. Be safe, and hopefully we'll see you working out soon on all the social media when that foot's healed up.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. Have a good one, guys.
All right, man. See ya.